Hi, everyone. I'm Greg Lambert, and this is Jackson Walker Fast Takes. President Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 into law, which has major changes in tax laws, health laws, and more. I asked Ashley Withers in our tax practice group, along with Nick Diamond in our healthcare and regulatory practice, to sit down with me and go over a few of the items in the law that affect their clients. Ashley and Nick, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
So Ashley, let's start off with you. What are the law's key tax component changes, and what are some of the major areas that clients need to be made aware of?
The big, big area that clients need to be aware of is the new renewable energy tax credits that this act is going to be putting in place. Some of these tax credits are extensions and amendments of existing credits, and some are completely brand new. So one of the credits that is really kind of unprecedented and is garnering a lot of interest is a new standalone credit for energy storage. Previously, the only time that a tax credit has been allowed for energy storage is when it's been paired with solar or other projects claiming an investment tax credit. But this is the first time that energy storage standing by itself can qualify for a tax credit. Some of the big items in terms of the tax credits that people will probably be interested in is the investment tax credit that's existing, and it's been extended for another 10 years. And the availability of the credit is a lot bigger if certain wage and apprenticeship requirements are met. There's also the clean electricity investment tax credit, which is available for any investment in a qualified facility and storage facility that's placed into service after December 31st, 2024, and produces or stores electricity with a greenhouse gas emissions rate of zero. And then there's also the Advanced Manufacturing Production Credit, which is available for the production of eligible components produced in the U.S. and sold after December 31st, 2022. Now, regarding these credits, the big thing that makes them so unique is that they are actually transferable to third parties. Previously, these types of credits have not been. And in terms of their transferability, they are transferable either total or a piece of them to an unrelated party. The only thing is that these credits are transferable once. Once they have been transferred, the recipient cannot transfer them again. Also, the credits cannot be transferred to a tax-exempt entity, state or local government, or political subdivision. And the transferability of these, as well as all the other credits that I mentioned, none of this goes into effect until 2023. Also, there is a 3-year carryback period for these credits, and so this can open up more options in terms of tax planning and offsetting your income from previous tax years.
So Ashley, are there any increases in taxes that people need to be aware of?
The biggest changes that we're seeing are for corporations. There is a 15% minimum book tax that this act is imposing. Now, that book tax is different than the normal 21% current tax on a corporation's adjusted gross income. And how this is designed to work is that under the act, a C corporation with at least $1 billion in net income is subject to the greater of the current 21% tax on a C corporation's adjusted gross income or a 15% tax on a C corporation's adjusted financial statement of income, which is generally the C corporation's book income, which is essentially GAAP with some adjustments. There has been some concern surrounding how you get to this $1 billion threshold, and that concern is that under the single employer rules of ERISA, a lot of entities are going to be aggregated. And so while you may have one C corporation that does not quite hit that $1 billion threshold, once you aggregate it with other controlled entities, some that may or may not include C corporations, the impact of this minimum book tax might be more expansive than originally was thought. And that's something we're going to be keeping a close eye on to see kind of how that plays out in the future. Also, for corporations, there is a 1% excise tax on stock buybacks, but that new tax is only applicable to publicly traded corporations.
So, Ashley, was there anything missing that didn't make it into the final version of the law?
Yes. So, one of the last-minute changes to the Act before it went before the Senate and House was that the proposed changes to carried interests, that was taken out. As originally proposed, the carried interests that fund managers have in the private equity world, the proposal was to change their current 3-year holding period in order to entitle them to capital gains tax on exit. The proposal was to raise that to 5 years. However, that was taken out at the last minute, and currently under the Act, there is no change in the state of the law regarding carried interests.
Thanks, Ashley. So, Nick, we'll bring you up to the plate now. From a healthcare view, what's the law's impact, say, on drug companies?
Well, Greg, there's likely to be a very significant impact, not just to drug companies, but also across all stakeholders in the healthcare ecosystem, just because drug pricing and access tends to be a complex contractual set of relationships between providers, payers, and drug companies. So we're likely to see a pretty broad impact here over the next couple of years. But in terms of provisions in the bill, or the new law rather, that are likely to really get the most attention and have the most significant impact. The first one is, or the law enables the negotiation of drug prices in the Medicare program. And it's not wholesale negotiation. The law limits the types of drugs and the number of drugs that the federal government can negotiate the price of. Essentially, the provisions are designed to only allow for negotiation of single source, higher cost drugs sold or used rather within the Medicare program rather than sort of all prescription drugs taken by Medicare beneficiaries. And then the second part of the new law that's really rather significant is the addition of what is being called the inflationary rebate. So essentially, if a prescription drug, the cost year to year rises faster than inflation for that year, the drug manufacturer would be required to pay a rebate to the federal government in the amount of that delta, so the difference between the cost of the drug and the inflation-adjusted cost for that given year. And that will apply not to the limited set of drugs for which the prices can be negotiated, but to a much, much wider spectrum of drugs under the Medicare program. And then finally, the third rather notable change in the law deals with the redesign of the Medicare Part D benefit. So the Part D benefit is the prescription drug coverage part of the Medicare program. And basically, the Part D benefit determines how costs are apportioned between enrollees, so the patients, the federal government, drug companies, and health insurance companies offering Part D plans. And basically, the changes in short form here are designed to shift over the next couple years more of the costs to both drug manufacturers and Part D plans and away from patients and to a lesser extent away from the federal government. So what this will do over time, it's likely to change the incentives for these different actors within the ecosystem. And again, this really goes to the likelihood that we'll see ripple effects for this law across the entire healthcare ecosystem.
And Nick, is there anything in the law related to vaccines?
Well, this is the interesting part, Greg, that was sort of buried at the end behind all the drug pricing negotiation provisions that were getting most of the airtime. So there are a couple provisions at the end of the law related to vaccine coverage and specifically cost sharing, so what a patient would pay out of pocket for certain vaccines. And what the law did is eliminate cost sharing for vaccines covered under Part D. Now, certain vaccines are covered under Part B, B as in boy, and certain are covered under Part D, D as in dog. This is just a peculiarity of how the law was written many years ago. And under Part B, vaccines don't have any cost sharing. So, for example, if you're in Medicare and you go get a flu shot at a pharmacy, you don't pay any cost sharing for it. But if you went to that same pharmacy and got, for example, a shingles vaccine, which is covered under Part D, it used to be the case that you would have to pay likely a bit of cost sharing, so a little bit out of your pocket for that vaccine. And that was really seen as an access barrier for ensuring that all Medicare-eligible individuals were up to date on their routine immunization. So what this bill does is remove that cost sharing for Part D vaccines, in that it also removes cost sharing for any recommended vaccinations within the Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance Protection Program, CHIP. And one of the peculiar parts about the Medicaid program is because of the state-to-state differences in how each state administers its Medicaid program, what happens is certain states have cost sharing for immunizations in Medicaid and others don't. It creates disparities then, which have public health implications state to state. So the law actually removes cost sharing across all Medicaid programs here in the coming years.
Thank you, Nick. All right, Ashley Withers and Nick Diamond, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks.
For more information on the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 or additional podcasts and webinars, please visit jw.com/fast. The music is by Eve Searles. You can also follow Jackson Walker LLP on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. This podcast is made available by Jackson Walker for informational purposes only, does not constitute legal advice, and is not a substitute for legal advice from a qualified counsel. Your use of this podcast does not create an attorney-client relationship between you and Jackson Walker. The facts and results of each case will vary, and no particular result can be guaranteed. Thanks for listening.